Shalene Desai, I am doing episode 36 for very selfish reasons. Oh. Yeah, I know. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Back in the day when I was full-time acting, animation voiceover was my favorite thing to do. So I decided I'm going to conduct this interview in four different voices. It'll be like a virtual audition. Okay? Okay? No, I'm kidding. Sorry. It's all about you, I swear. You're senior vice president, though, of adult series for Warner Brothers Animation, and you're the one who spearheads development of original animated programming and blue ribbon content, where you're developing other cool platforms like VR and podcasting. I don't know if that involves casting, so I'll just stick to all about you.
It does involve casting. That is a big part of it.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, no, I swear.
You might get a job out of this, EB.
All right, good. Hey, it's EB Moss, and this is episode 36 of Insider Interviews, where you get the insider scoop on the business of media, marketing, and advertising. Today, we're going to focus on media because I'm talking to Shalene Desai, who's the SVP of Adult Animation for Warner Brothers Animation. Shalene does a great job of describing how one can go from places like NBC and David Letterman on to CMT and ultimately into animation. He's also now developing podcasts, something we love. And guess what? Some of that revolves around a very favorite caped crusader. So here's Shalene talking about animation and a path from TV development to an overarching career in content. Shalene Desai, how did you get here? Because I know you from CMT, where you brought us Nashville, which was one of my guilty pleasures, and a bunch of other things, but animation, TV... Talk to me.
Well, look, nice to chat with you again. My path is, God, it's a long-winded one, but growing up, I always loved television. I loved two things. One was basketball. Thought I was going to make it to the NBA and play on the Lakers. When that dream died at 17, you know, you had to have a career. But, you know, television was something I loved. I was the kid growing up in LA and getting the LA Times calendar section, which would come out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And like there would be the ratings. I was just fascinated by all those numbers. Like, ooh, wait, I watched that show. Why is that number 7? And why is this number 2? Or, you know, and then when shows would run and you'd see the credits, I'm like, who are these people? Like, it's someone makes these things, but never thought that it could actually be a career. It just didn't feel available. And so I went away to college, came back, and then just started, look, this is what I want to do. I'm going to figure it out. Didn't know a soul. And did all those jobs that you've heard of, the PA job, the assistant job, the assistant to the assistant. I worked at an agency mailroom. And, you know, after a while, if you want it bad enough and you start meeting people and you kind of start connecting the dots and caught my first break when Fox, the network, was really on the rise. And I became the assistant to the head of comedy then, a woman named Kelly Kolchak, who I'm still close with to this day. And she just took me under her wing, and that really is where my career took off. I got promoted at Fox, and then that boss, Kelly, I mentioned, went to go work for David Letterman, who was one of my comedy heroes. So got to work for David Letterman at his company, Worldwide Pans. Became a producer for The Late Late Show, where I booked the comedians and helped hire the writers, and really just got thrown into the full Hollywood television machine then. So I... you know, spent some time with Letterman, and which was an amazing learning ground. And in the meantime, my old colleagues at News Corp, so Fox, they were forming a studio called Fox 21. And I got recruited by them to go back to News Corp and be one of the founding executives. And that studio, we did all kinds of fun stuff. We did one of basic cables for scripted series at FX called Sons of Anarchy. It ran for a long time. We did a reality series called Beauty and the Geek that was on the CW and WB. That was a fun one. So we got to do all kinds of different forms of television. It wasn't just,
Not animation yet.
Not animation yet. But that, it does come into my story there at Fox 21, where we were encouraged to do different forms, different genres of television. And so that's where we started in animation. And We had sold a show called Brickleberry to Fox as a live action show. And when it didn't feel right for live action, that's when we converted it to animation. And that was the first animated series I worked on that ended up going to Comedy Central and running for a number of seasons. And so that's where I got my first kind of taste and process and love for animation. But, you know, you go where the opportunity takes you. And so I went to a couple of different startups to try, again, to helping figure out how to take that small idea or that one-liner of an idea or that just that notion of something to become a show or some sort of project where you kind of see it through fruition. And then ended up working with Jason Bateman. Jason had signed a new deal for his company called Aggregate and had a deal at Universal for film and television. And I went to go work with him to run the TV deal. And that was, again, a great learning ground, and he was a great partner to work with. And I worked with him up until the Ozark pilot was going, and that was going to be outside of our Universal deal. And so bringing it back full circle a little bit to the start, that's where I went to CMT when basic cable, where they were doing original series across the board. Every network wanted to be in that space. And since I was early in that, I got recruited by Viacom to help start a scripted division for them. Then we acquired Nashville and had a whole bunch of other stuff behind it. And then as corporate shakeups go, you know, about 6 months in, I'm into my third CEO at Viacom and decided to shut down scripted program. And so it's
I don't feel sorry for you.
No, you know,
you're dropping names like Jason Bateman and David Letterman. I'm sorry. It's like one pass.
I've been fortunate to work with some really interesting, fun, great, creative, all kinds of people. But I've now 20 plus years and been through the kind of ringers of the industry. And so when that happened at Viacom, I was like, all right, strategy shifts. And so then it was really a time for reflection. We just had our second baby. It's like, what do I really want to do? And my passion along the way was always in comedy. And along with that came animation because it was still primarily comedy. And when I got introduced to my now bosses at Warner Brothers, it just made sense where, you know, there was a boom in adult animation.
What year was that?
That was a little over 2 years ago. Yeah.
Well, I am going to hitch my wagon to your star.
Well, I thank you for that. I'm trying. You know, yeah.
Cream rises to the top in every other cliche I can think of. But we've heard about your past. So let's shape what Warner Brothers animation is today. I know it, of course, from growing up with its original Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny fame and then DC Comics and all those superheroes, and then the Cartoon Network type of merger acquisition, and then that gave us Scooby-Doo. But now there's also like HBO Max and all these adult animation offerings. So how are things going? Are we in some golden age of content? Or are you just having a rocking good time now?
We are, and your perception of the studio is dead on. It was for years a kids and family studio. You know, that was the bread and butter. It was the IP. It was Hanna-Barbera and Looney Tunes and DC. And within that, a lot of it was adult because there wasn't a real business there for adult animation. You know, if you really step back and look at it, even up to 15 years ago, if it was primetime, it was Fox and Sunday Night and The Simpsons and Family Guy and King of the Hill and all those great properties. But they were the only real ones in the space. There was the Comedy Central or the FX and, you know, in-house Adult Swim being a sister company. That was the one outlet that was available to Warner Brothers Animation, because really corporation to corporation couldn't make a deal with News Corp and Fox. So we weren't really in the space of that Sunday night. And with Adult Swim, that's where we did have a few programs. Mike Tyson Mysteries was a really well-regarded one, and we worked with the creator of that now. And so there weren't very many outlets for us. But what happened a few years ago was streaming. So it was Netflix. They became a player. Then there was just a changing media landscape where News Corp was being sold or merged with Disney. And so all of a sudden Fox became open, and then HBO Max was announced, and then they were going to do. So now what happened was, along with all of content, but really in animation, all these streamers and all these players wanted to be in it because it was just a great place to tell stories. The demand was there. Ratings were there, kind of all of it. There was creators that wanted to be in that space. Actors wanted to be in that space. So there was just a boom. And when I got to Warner Brothers, it was already, this is a great space to be in. We're doing well. We're selling all around. And I'll even back up a little bit. Us being a studio within a big vertically integrated corporation, you know, we have an interesting business in the way we approach what we're doing, which is we want to definitely produce and sell to our sister companies. So HBO Max, Adult Swim. As a big studio, we're also a supplier to other networks and streamers. So we have stuff set up at Fox and Freeform and the other streamers. And so it's, we get to a little bit, play a little bit of both. One is to our sister companies, the other is to outside. So we get to spread our IP and our projects kind of all around town and find the best home for it. We don't just have to go to X, Y, and Z because we're part of the same company. We're encouraged to, like, let's find the right place for it where we can tell the best stories and have some legs and really get some notice. So that's been fun.
So what's happened with the, you know, the pandemic? Did that add to the boom in animation?
So I got to Warner Brothers and things are going well. 6 months in, we're selling all around. And then COVID happens and animation, turns out, is fairly pandemic proof in the sense that no production shut down across our studio. And that was from preschool and kids into family into adult and across all things. No animation production shut down in our pipeline. And so that was part of it. Look, hopefully COVID ends soon, or there's not another global pandemic, or we don't know what's going to happen, as this show does. And so we can keep continuing to make content. So that was a big part of what's happened during COVID. The other part was there was just a lot more sampling. You know, people are home. People that traditionally might not watch animation or, you know, have that, oh, cartoons are for kids attitude. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's not for me. You know, I'm an adult. I'm a grown up. I don't watch cartoons. People started watching and just realized, oh, that's just entertaining. That's just funny. That's just a great story. So sampling across the board, not just for our company, kind of in the business, has really gone up. And so the demand has even increased.
That's great. I was definitely wondering about that because, you know, this is digital. You don't have to necessarily be on the same sound stage and things like that. So that's the sort of bright light in our dark cloud right now. I want to also add one little more bit of backstory. Is that a phrase?
That's a phrase. We can use it.
I want to add a little more bit of backstory. and then I promise we're going to talk about a really cool future project. We're going to look forward. But looking back, you and I participated on a panel together for NatP for a conference called Content Cast. And that was all about the sort of crossover IP between podcasts and all other media, like TV shows reaching fans through podcasts or podcasts being turned into TV series. And I remember you had mentioned that you loved Homecoming as a really good example. And by the way, you can catch that panel as one of my previous podcasts. But Shalene, I was so intrigued by all you said. I wanted to have this dedicated session with you. And apropos that crossover IP, one big example is coming out of your purview right now, which is you're doing something with HBO Max for their first ever podcast, right?
That's right. Their first ever scripted podcast.
Tell us about that.
So this is a scripted podcast with Batman and using those characters. And the way this came about was a couple of years ago, just seeing what was happening in the industry and with scripted podcasts being an interesting place, again, just like, where can you tell great stories? And so that was definitely an emerging area. So us at the studio decided we're going to produce a Batman series and we're going to do it without a distributor. We're going to do it what's called on spec and we're going to fund it ourselves. And so the series we're doing for HBO Max is called Batman, The Audio Adventures. It's by Dennis McNicholas, one of the head writers of Saturday Night Live. And Dennis came to us with just a fun, interesting idea using Batman and that world, but doing it more in the Adam West 60s series tone.
Love it.
It was just really fun. And HBO Max decided they were going to be in scripted podcasting and chose this to be one of their first ones. And so we're getting ready for that to come out coming up soon.
Oh, that's very cool. Now, we're like, lousy with Batman, I tell ya. That's another voice. But you also have Batman Unburied. Can you talk about that one?
We do. So as scripted podcasting and shows started to get notice and it just became a real genre, which came out of nowhere, Spotify decided that they loved our IP as we do. And we did a big output deal with Spotify to work with some of our DC characters. And out of that deal, the first one we're doing is called Batman Unburied. It's with David Goyer. He didn't write it, but came up with the concept. And we just finished production on it. And so that one will be sometime mid next year. It hasn't been announced yet. We're kind of figuring out what that date is. But that one would be a little more dramatic in tone, a little more of a thriller than the HBO Max one. But it's just another place to tell a cool Batman story, which I think fans will love.
Yeah, I definitely will. Do you know, Shalene, I had bats in my New York City apartment and one flew through my hair. So every time I go down to my lobby, my doorman laugh at me and say, "Hey, Bat Girl." So everything Batman is,
is. I love that.
I did not love it, but
it traumatized you.
Right. So, all right. So then I want to recap. We have the Batman Audio Adventures, and that one, the Bruce Wayne voice is Jeffrey Wright, I believe.
It is.
And then you have amazing people, an old friend of mine, Brent Spiner, Jason Sudeikis, who doesn't love Jason. You have Katie Rich and Rosario Dawson. I mean, that's incredible right there. Then we have Batman Unburied, which will be the Spotify collab. And that's with, I think I read something recently. Is it Winston Duke from Black Panther?
It's Winston Duke playing Batman, which was a fun, cool casting that we were lucky to get him. Yeah, we just finished recording him and he was amazing. I can't wait for people to hear him.
Awesome. And then, of course, Batman Caped Crusader. That's not a podcast. That's another animated series. And that will be cartoon and also HBO Max, right?
Correct. It'll be on both. And that's a new animated series that has been picked up there and is in early stages of writing.
Very cool. All right. So you must eat, breathe, and sleep Batman things.
There's a lot of Batman, which is exciting because, you know, who doesn't love Batman?
So, exactly.
You know, fun to work on. To say that's your job to just figure out what to do with Batman at times is, you know, who would have thought as a kid growing up to say, like, I just get to figure out what to do with Batman.
So, if you can't be basketball, at least it's Batman.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Again, I don't feel sorry for you.
I don't. Yeah.
So one other interesting thing, you also head up Blue Ribbon Content, and that dabbles in cool new media techniques like VR and AI, maybe, what have you.
So Blue Ribbon was formed as a division to do emerging technology, emerging forms of distribution, just all emerging things within our industry. So it started out, we were doing short form digital series when that was kind of what was happening and what was getting attention. When that dried up a little bit, it shifted into smaller genre films that weren't really getting made. I think more of the along the lines of an indie film, but using some of our IP. And so that's still a little bit of what we do. But right now, really, and this is where scripted podcasting comes out, because again, an emerging form of storytelling, and going back to what you're saying about VR and AI and all of that, we're not really that immersed in it quite yet, but we're looking at, hey, well, how can we tell interesting stories in VR or AI? And so it's still not a fully formed thing we're doing, but we're definitely looking at that all the time.
Along that Batman thread, there was news recently that a former Batman actor, Val Kilmer, in a documentary about him, they had used AI to recreate his voice. What are your thoughts about how we can take advantage of or go too far with AI?
I did kind of hear about what Val Kilmer had said, and you know, it's interesting. We're taking a look at it and figuring out like how we can play in that, but no real plans for that yet.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I worry about it being a slippery slope. But, you know, on the other hand, there's amazing techniques. You know, there's a company called A Million Ads. They also spoke at ContentCast.
Yeah.
And they are able to use AI to voice different iterations of an ad so that you don't have to get an E.B. Moss to say, now in Chicago, now in New York, now blah, blah, blah. So that's an interesting use, but it could be a slippery slope.
It could be a slippery slope. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. That's why I think we're being a little cautious as we figure out how we're going to and if we're going to be in that space.
So sticking a little bit with the business side now, I'm fascinated by how you're going to partner with, let's say, a Spotify in marketing a new podcast like this. Where does Warner Brothers' effort kick in and where does Spotify's and how does that balance?
It's a joint venture, you know, in every way, from production to casting to all that. We do it together. That is our deal. So in marketing, they do take the lead a little bit, but all in conjunction with us and with kind of all our divisions. So it's been a great collaborative effort so far.
And overall, Shalene, when a piece of content is being pitched to you, I'm really interested in the development side of things. And do you look at it with an eye towards, can you monetize it? Do you look at it with whether it'll work best as a podcast in this case, or an animation, or have other extensions? Tell me about how things get started and how you perceive its value.
I think, you know, it's an interesting question because I think people might have the perception of, oh, hey, here's a podcast that can become a TV show or a movie or whatever. And to us, that's great if that happens, but that's not the starting point for it. I think what we first look at is this an interesting, compelling story? Is this something we want to tell? And if it is, then we figure out the best medium to do that. And if it's animation, great. Or if it was a live action TV series that or TV show or a pilot that maybe didn't go, but you know what? There's an interesting story there we can tell in audio, but it can't just be, oh, it was a busted TV pilot. Because I think when this genre really started emerging, we got thrown a lot of TV pilots or films that didn't go. And it's like, oh, well, it didn't go. So just make it as a podcast. Well, it's not that simple. You know, now being in this space for a while, we've kind of learned a lot of the best practices and things to look for and listen for. It has to be a story you can tell in audio, be compelling. And if it does happen to jump genres like Homecoming, like how that became a television series, well, then that's awesome. That's icing on the cake. Again, if it happens, great. But really, let's just tell a great, interesting story that the fans are going to love.
What's the difference, let's say, between an animated project, a podcast, in terms of balancing your brand awareness goals, your sponsorships, those kinds of measurement tools? What are they and how do you assess them?
When a project does come into us, we really start from the very beginning of like, all right, what genre, what medium do we want to tell this story in? And so if it lends itself to be better as a podcast, great. If it's animated, even better. Because for as much as we are in the scripted podcasting space, animation still is the day job, if you will. And so we start there. Like, where are we going to be able to tell the best story and then go from there? And then as we get into the process, it's developing it and then pitching it. What's the best home for it? Is it through the Spotify deal? If it's a podcast, is it through HBO Max? If it's an animated series, and we kind of start to build it from the ground up and go from there.
Are you involved in either co-pro or on the distribution side?
A little bit. Yeah. We do dive into because of we're producers of the content. So sometimes we will do co-productions with other studios, with smaller companies that are just doing different forms of animation. Because us being a big studio, we do have access to a lot of that talent that's out there. So we really look to figure out the best way to make this show. And if that is a co-production, great. If it's just us doing it, that's also great. But really always comes back to that content and what's the best way for us to make that.
Also, there's a lot of buzz about the friction between, let's say, brand awareness as a form of marketing And these days, and you know, you getting involved in podcasting and streamed products as well, performance marketing is the darling these days. And you know, if you read something like The Continuum, that's all about how products should be a combination of brand and demand, awareness marketing and performance marketing. Do you get involved in either or both?
Don't get involved in it so deeply because, again, we have great colleagues that are really immersed in that, and that's what they do day to day. But when you look at it from my perspective, it's really, to me, it's the brand. I work with all our IP. I consider brands Batman, going back to, you know, all the various forms of storytelling we're working with Batman. It's the brand. That's where I think I've come at it from, because that's what I work with a lot. So if you look at Batman, so much awareness from kids to seniors. Everyone has come across Batman. So to me, it comes from the brand. But again, with marketing, I have amazing colleagues at our company that really just know that world and educate us as we're developing stuff, because that's where we approach it from, is that IP and brand.
So the sales team isn't then saying to you, you know, this wasn't so sellable, or the distribution partners, there wasn't a lot of uptake. How do you measure that success? How does that come back to you?
Sure. We get feedback all the time, of course, of, hey, this didn't work. And we try to figure out why. And was that something we did early on in terms of how we're crafting the story? Or was it marketing? Where was there a disconnect from what we thought a great show was? And so we definitely talked to all those groups, and all then with our distribution partners, whether that's a network or if it's audio, you know, whomever, but we get feedback from them, and it all goes back to data, right? Whatever data we can get to really figure out what's going on. We are always looking to see more, I guess, is the best way to put it.
So let's leave it on a fun note. Basketball, Batman, what's the next big dream?
Oh God.
If you could blue sky it at Blue Ribbon.
at Blue Ribbon, at Warner Brothers Animation, at all of it. It's really to keep going and doing what I'm doing now, but doing a bigger scale. It's more series.
How is that possible?
More projects. It is possible. We have a lot of fun stuff in early development that we're getting ready to take to the market in the next 6 months, 9 months, and we'll see what lands and where. But really, we just think there's so much more opportunity right now as a studio to get some of our series out there in the next year. Going to know a lot more. So it's to keep it going.
And what are you encouraging your kids, who we hear a little bit in the background, which is adorable. There's three of them now?
Two of them. There's two of them, yeah. Okay. Sometimes they sound like three or four, but there's two, yeah.
What are they watching as cartoons now?
It's so interesting you ask. They watch a lot across the board, and as much as, you know, we should try to limit screens to kids and all that, you know, I work in television, so I do kind of encourage it a little more than I probably should, but the YouTube effect is a big thing. My son, who turns 9, loves YouTube along with television, and, you know, they're pretty seamless in. It's not, oh, hey, I want to watch something on HBO Max. It's really like, I want to watch that show, or my 3-year-old, I want to watch Cocomelon. That's a big one, you know, so kind of everything, but they don't know networks. They don't know NBC versus Fox versus HBO Max. They know I want my show and I want it now.
Yeah. Well, I have one little request. I grew up loving Rocky and Bullwinkle, and
so good.
It was such smart content. And I think that might fall into the adult animation genre if it were recreated today. So I'm gonna ask for that with all those quippy things and puns that were in that. Oh my God, it was brilliant.
It could. We're looking to reinvent stuff all the time, so we'll take a look.
Well, you know where to find me.
Oh. I think that's really what it was. Do you want to get you a part on it?
I'll take anything. All right. Shalene Desai, Senior Vice President of Warner Brothers Animation and Blue Ribbon Content. Thank you very, very much for this. This was very entertaining.
This was fun. Thank you, and nice to see you again.
Well, I hope you got some good insider scoop
from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. If you enjoyed this content, please feel free to buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/MossAppeal. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on social media and let me know if you have a question or a suggestion for a next stellar guest in media, marketing, and advertising. Speaking of stellar, my theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. Thanks again for listening.